have Dr. Chris O'Connell from UCD. Good morning, Dr. O'Connell.
Morning. How are you? Sorry, it's DCU, but yeah, it's all fine.
Okay, DCU. Sorry about that. Before we start off, this deal, Mercosur, if I'm pronouncing that properly, the EU-Mercosur trade deal, has it any reflection at all from or anything to do with Brexit?
No. This is a deal that's been in the making for over 20 years. They started trying to negotiate this deal back in 1999, if I'm not mistaken. But really, it took off in terms of progress about 2 years ago. And after all that, the deal was actually done put together in a very short space of time. But I think as time has gone on since then, and there's more and more scrutiny put on this deal, it's increasingly obvious what a bad deal it is for almost everyone involved.
And as they say, is it done and dusted as a deal?
No, the deal has been negotiated, I think in fact was due to be put to the EU Council in. Probably it was due to be put there, I think, last month at a summit. There was certainly talk about that. And in fact, I think Ireland's role in delaying that due to the resignation of Phil Hogan as EU Commissioner for Trade, I think is one of the things that has delayed that. So the deal has not been signed off on. And in fact, in the last couple of months, there have been a number of EU countries that have pulled back from it, but in a very qualified way, and I think that's one of the things that Uplift and others are trying to highlight now is that the headlines, for example, from Ireland and other countries in the EU that these countries are not going to sign the agreement is a very qualified pulling back. It's saying that they will not sign it in its current state. And so really what I think people are pointing to now is that there are moves afoot to try to put something together that would make this deal politically palatable. But I think most Indigenous rights activists and environmental activists and also farmers in the EU are highlighting that really that isn't going to be sufficient to fix what is a broken deal.
And will it impact the same on all, say, agricultural countries to an extent? Well, I mean, people in agriculture in all European countries, are specifically with Ireland, would be hit maybe harder than others.
Yeah, and I think the two countries that are generally considered that will be hardest hit in this side would be, in terms of their agricultural sectors, would be Ireland and France. In fact, I think opposition to this probably has been strongest in Austria. I'm not quite sure why that is, but Ireland and France, and particularly France now, is sort of leading this opposition. But as I say, it's a qualified opposition. So the attempts now, from what we can tell, are to put together some form of wording and some form of instrument. I guess people will be familiar with this sort of thing from all the Brexit stuff over the last few years, mm-hmm. where additional documents and wording are put together to try to satisfy parties on either side. And that wording is due to be put together around deforestation in particular. Just this week, the deforestation figures that came out of Brazil showed that the highest rates of deforestation since 2008. And all of that is huge concern. There have been fires, again, the fires in the Amazon and other forests in the Mercosur countries this year have been mm-hmm. even greater than last year. And so I think all of that has forced the EU countries to at least appear to try to do something. Mm-hmm. And Ireland is very much in that line. The Taoiseach Leo Varadkar, who's also the Minister for Trade and Business, stated that very much almost word for word what some across the EU have said, that the agreement cannot be signed in its current state, and that they're going to look for what they call guarantees, that there will be an end to deforestation or no further, no growth in deforestation. But in fact, these guarantees are highly questionable because there's actually nothing in the agreement, no mechanisms to enforce any such guarantees. And really, this would just be, I think, very much some words, but without necessarily a lot of strength behind them.
And just to clarify, I asked you at the outset about Brexit, but if this has been going on for 20 years, what was Britain's reaction to the deal before all the Brexit stuff came about? Were they for it?
I'm not fully sure, but essentially what happened here in terms of the negotiation was not that long after all of this began. And it's interesting to note that this agreement was started in the 1990s because it looks very much like an agreement from that time.
Mm-hmm.
Very much about the wonders of trade, very little about the environment or the negative sides of free trade. But what really happened here was in the Mercosur countries, which are Argentina, Brazil, but also Paraguay and Uruguay. And three of those countries within a few years of that starting were being led by broadly sort of left-wing socially democratic governments that very much then stalled any progress toward this. And it was only when particularly Argentina and Brazil under President Bolsonaro moved very much to the right in the last few years that this deal was done and done very rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
So Britain would have been part of the EU stance at that stage. But by the time that this really started to happen in 2017 and into 2018, I guess they were, you know, in a different place.
Yeah, the reason I'm asking that to an extent is, could they do it independently now if they wanted to? If they sort of said, well, this sounds good to me, could they do it independently when they go out of Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it's what they've stated as their aim. But in terms of actual negotiations, I'm not aware if they've gotten to that point yet.
Mm-hmm.
But the Mercosur countries as a bloc are definitely at another stage where they're looking to sign trade agreements at the moment. So it would be an opportune moment if that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah, because, I mean, the politics over the past 20 years has been a helter-skelter in all countries nearly, hasn't it? To an extent, you think of America, I suppose. But
that's certainly been the case in Brazil, as they say, under President Bolsonaro. There are a lot of issues around him as a person and in terms of, but particularly in terms of his policies, you know, he's one of those presidents that has really not taken the pandemic seriously. He has a history of making racist and misogynistic and homophobic statements. But a particular concern, I think, has been two things that are very much related to this agreement. One is the deforestation. Despite denials and attempts to blame NGOs and everyone for fires, the figures clearly show that deforestation is skyrocketing in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
And the other aspect has been indigenous rights. So along with the deforestation and dismantling of a lot of the institutions that were built up in Brazil to try to combat deforestation has been a similar attack on institutions that were designed to protect indigenous peoples and their rights. And so really encouraging the invasion of indigenous territories by outsiders looking to engage in, as I say, deforestation, and that often leads to cattle farming and soy plantations and also gold mining in different parts. So, and this has been very much the trend under President Bolsonaro has been to encourage, actively encourage those sorts of activities, and dismantle the protections that were built up over years to put there to safeguard those, and that's the political context into which the EU is potentially entering into an agreement at the moment. But even leave that aside, even if we had a different president in Brazil, there's still nothing really in this agreement as it stands that would guarantee, which is the word that the EU is using, guarantee protection. So I suppose what we're asking for is a clearer statement from the Irish government as to where it really stands, because when you look at it, this statement by the Taoiseach is pretty open to interpretation.
That's what I was going to say. It sounds very vague, as usual, with a lot of things that come out of the government. Very vague.
Yeah, and one of the things we'd like to see as part of this, and it's not, you know, nothing here is definitive, but the Department of Business, Enterprise and Innovation, of which Leo Varadkar is minister, they've commissioned an environmental, an economic and sustainability impact assessment, which involved stakeholder consultations around not only the potential economic impact of the deal, but also around issues such as indigenous rights that I've mentioned, deforestation, but also other issues like public health. So under President Bolsonaro, Brazil, for example, has rushed through the approvals of hundreds of pesticides that are being used in Brazilian agriculture, many of which, at least 150, are actually prohibited in the EU. So there are issues around public health, both in the Mercosur and in the EU. There are issues of workers' rights and labour, particularly another area that they've been dismantling is Brazil's quite famous process around labour rights and particularly slave labour. And so all of those issues enter into this as well. This is the context into which we're doing it. So we'd like to see this report as part of, in general, greater transparency around this agreement and the political processes and the political thinking behind it. This report that has been commissioned by the department, by Leo Varadkar's department, and according to answer to a parliamentary question that he gave back in October, where he said that the research in that was well advanced, and that they expected it to be available shortly, and it's now December, we still haven't seen that report. So that's one thing that we'd like to see. But in the meantime, as I say, while all these delays have been going on, more and more research is being done, more and more evidence is coming out. There was a big report in France by the French state that basically said that the environmental costs, looking at it very much in terms of costs and benefits, that the environmental costs of this agreement would exceed the economic gains.
Mm-hmm.
The economic gains are primarily in a lot of it related to, for example, the auto industry exporting cars and vehicles to the Mercosur in return for agriculture.
And has there been anything coming from the Irish Farmers Association and other groups like that who are putting pressure on the government to clarify the situation and also to be more proactive?
Yeah, I believe so. I'm not in touch with them myself, but I know obviously last year when the fires were getting a lot of media attention during the summer months of 2019, and that there were some protests held by farmers, and I believe that they continue to oppose this deal, and so there's certainly been pressure from that sphere, and I think it's the as I say that the growing picture that we have is of an agreement that's not fit for purpose. That has long-term costs for the entire planet, and not that many benefits, and even the economic benefits are very much questionable. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I think even the EU's own sustainability impact assessment, which was not actually completed until about at least 6 months after the deal was done. So they did a deal without even seeing their own impact mm-hmm. assessment. The jobs that they say will be created in the Mercosur are very much sort of precarious jobs, informal jobs, not good jobs that we'd like to see. And in the meantime, you know, the other side of it is you're going to see concentrations of greater land holdings mm-hmm. By big agribusiness, and that's going to come at the expense of small farmers and indigenous peoples who are living more or less sustainably, and instead they're going to be driven out and driven into those sorts of precarious jobs if they can find any.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's over, you know, out of a lot of people's remit to an extent, but it would impact on the ordinary public in Europe, Irish, for instance, when it gets to the shelves and the goods being of a good standard and a safety standard. And I think, as well as the environmental part of it, that should be concentrated on as well, to get the public themselves interested. We're all interested in the environment, are we? But that seems so remote and far away. And the rainforest has been talked about for maybe the past 40 years or so. And people talk about it for a while and then you forget. But when something happens on the doorstep, maybe it might be minor, but it can sort of get people's goat up and get them on the move.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I think in the case of Ireland in particular, you know, we can see it from every perspective that this is not a good deal. As you say, in terms of public health, in terms of what sorts of goods, and sort of generally bringing down the standards in the EU rather than, you know, have the opposite effect of sort of raising standards across the two regions, we're going to likely see standards coming down. I think there are questions with the impact on the agricultural sector here. And then I know what you're saying about the Amazon, and it does come and go, or other forests as well. But I think in the context of the climate crisis, that has more immediacy now, perhaps than it did in the past.
And it's manifesting itself all the time in the weather that's around the world, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah, and I think people can see those connections much more clearly now. This isn't something that's just happening or potentially happening sometime in the future far away. I think people can see that this is happening in different parts of the world and it's happening now. And the research that talks about the possibility of the Amazon reaching a tipping point is very worrying as well. You know, if we think about the current situation as of right now, even before this deal, even without this deal, you know, the EU is already importing over 2 million tons of soy. You know, there's a recent study that one-fifth of that is associated with deforestation. So, you know, there's over one football field being deforested every 3 minutes linked to commodity imports.
Okay, what way would you like to see people helping Dr. O'Connell in any sense of way, the public, and can they help in any way, put pressure?
I think so. I think that obviously I would suggest that people go to Uplift's website. I believe that's uplift.ie. It is, yeah, and have a look there. There is a campaign now to look for more information from the Irish government, in particular that this impact assessment report be released, be made public, and so that people can be informed with regard to this. I think as well to ask for clarification, to seek clarification, and they can do this in a variety of ways, including contacting their TDs, you know, around what is the Irish government's stance on this deal. You know, for me and for many others that have looked at this, this deal, it can't be salvaged, and it, you know, it needs to be scrapped. And if there's going to be a trade deal done, it needs to be done in ways that are going to guarantee, you know, high standards in terms of including affected groups like Indigenous peoples and workers. It needs to be much more transparent, and there needs to be transparency about where goods are coming from. And there needs to be some real binding legal mechanisms to enforce things like human rights due diligence and environmental due diligence, because otherwise what we have is some nice words. And as you said, you know, part of the reason why these issues come every so often and go away again, I think over history, has been because we've got some nice words, something that looks and sounds plausible, and we move on. But in fact, the reality is that it hasn't really changed anything.
Okay, thank you very much. Listen, very grateful for giving us all of your time there. Uplift.ie, people should look up for all the information on this and take a great interest in it. Dr. Chris O'Connell, thank you very much from DCU. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.